Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for doing session. Feel kind of bad. I began it, opened it, got things ready to get things going first night, and then succumbed. But here we are. Although it's the way the schedule is. A lot of the worker session, of course, is done on the logistical worker session is done on the front end by each and every one of us. You know, some of you bought flights and travelled from out of state across the ocean. Others just came from an hour away, but still had to put gas in the car or maybe charge the batteries if you have a Tesla, and squared away responsibilities and gave apologies for not going to New Year parties or whatever else. A lot of effort has already gone into the session before we arrive. And then as soon as really the precautions and the guidelines are read and we enter in, then it's quite a simple schedule to involve oneself with. We may not find it simple, and it can certainly be very challenging. But really, it's quite simple. And we get up the same time every day, enter the Buddha hall for sitting at the same time, the meals are planned, etc., etc. And all of this container is set up and maintained in this way simply because it's proven effective over many centuries in encouraging and catalyzing people in their realization of their self-nature. To create a simple but strong container where that which is perhaps most difficult to see is most apparent. And that's really why we spend so much time in sitting, so much time in here, because it's quite simple and very direct. You know, we arrange for the body for meditation, enter into our practice. And then there's really nothing to do but do the activity of Zazen, sitting Zen. And of course, though, we're very good at making it a difficult process. We have this objective function, this consciousness, which is conditioned and also designed to understand life in a dualistic fashion. Or we have that function. And that's the function that typically runs into a wall when confronted with Zen. It can't be reached or really explained. It's never satisfactory when it's delivered as an intellectual interpretation. The satisfaction that comes from the practice of Zazen is one which is realized by the whole body, realized by the body and mind, and becomes familiar and reliable. But it isn't built on a scheme or a method or any intellectual understanding. Not that it excludes intellectual understanding. That too is a wonderful aspect. And the New Year session is always a quite a different one here, or typically, because many different people, again, tend to have a lot of beginners, people who might be trying this even for the first time, alongside people who've been coming every year for many years, and other people who've devoted most of their life or career to the practice. So many different strands all coming together. What's important is to be clear about one's own aspiration for a session or for the inquiry into Buddhism or Zen. What it is, if you have a goal, right? It's a time of year to take stock and think about goals. So I'm going to bring up a case koan from the tradition. This is from the Mumon Kan, the Gateless Gate, a collection of Zen koans. This is case 32. A non-Buddhist questions Buddha. So here's the case. A non-Buddhist, in all earnestness, asked the world-honored one, I do not ask about words. I do not ask about no words. The world-honored one just sat still. The non-Buddhist praised him, saying, the world-honored one, in his great benevolence and great mercy, has opened the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way. Then bowing, he took his leave. Ananda asked the Buddha, what did the non-Buddhist realize that made him praise you so much? The world-honored one replied, he is just like a fine horse that runs at the shadow of a whip. And Mumon's commentary. Ananda is Buddha's disciple, but his realization is less than the non-Buddhist's. Now tell me, how far is the distance between the non-Buddhist and Buddha's disciple? Here it concludes with a verse. Walking on the edge of a sword, running over a ridge of jagged ice, not using steps or ladders, jumping from the cliff with hands free. Okay, so a very typical Zen koan with a pointer, with a main case, commentary, and appreciatory verse. And this was written somewhere back in, let me see, the collection put together, somewhere in the 13th century. So here we are, more than 700 years later, bringing up these words. And again, like the tradition of the forms that we've been using here, these collections have been used over the centuries, collections put together and maintained. Is there something here which can be of real use for anyone who is inquiring into this direct way? The compiler of the text, Mumon, a successor of his, this would be set in China, who came to Japan and built a temple to, Mumon's lineage. And there's a friend of mine who lives in Japan. He's practiced out there many years at this point. And he lived here for several years, for about 3 years, I think, we were practicing together. And he was out in Japan and he got sent to this temple to do some work. You know, as you've seen the last few days, work practice very important in Zen practice. He was sent out there to do some work and he went to one of Mumon's temples. And they had a hedge as part of a garden that was growing around. And this hedge had a mistake in it, like quite a clear mistake. And he'd done a lot of gardening, and he was told to trim the hedge in a certain way. And then he evened out the part that was the mistake. And he evened that out to make it look nicer. And then the head monk, the priest who lived there, who came back, saw it and had just an absolute fit. That, because apparently that mistake had been done when they first planted it, and the first time it ever got cut by some eminent teacher from 400 years ago. So they just maintained the mistake. It's kind of funny. So Zen is very slow to change. Right? And the forms that we use are slow to change. And, you know, I always remember that when I first arrived here, when I first lived here, after the first couple of weeks, I had ideas about what should be changed with a schedule and the way that we do things. You know, for sure, you know, some things. And only with, and then after some years of being here, many of these ways that we do things, our bows as we walk in, the way that we sit down, the way that we walk. Over the years, the practical wisdom of those functions really comes forward. You see why everything is done in this certain way. Again, to help direct our attention here. To help bring our attention back home to this realization, whatever this realization, however that shows up, so that we are continually deepening and refining our immersion in our life just as it is. Now we may find when we sit and when we practice, aspects are confusing in our own life, confusing on the so-called, you know, if we look at an external level, and also on an internal level. The schedule doesn't change, but our internal process always different, always changing on that level. It may always look the same when you look in the window and see everyone sitting. It's like there's nothing going on. But there's all these many different universes colliding in here, you know. It might look very peaceful from the outside, but on the inside everybody has their process and everyone has their reason for doing this in the first place. And why be here? Why choose this for a new year? To greet it in this way. So in the case, we have a non-Buddhist in all earnestness asked the Buddha, "I do not ask about words, I don't ask about no words." I'm sure we have some non-Buddhists here. You know, this the practice of meditation, practice of present awareness, spiritual inquiry, does not require one to become a Buddhist or to identify in that way. We may choose to identify in that way, but it's not required. Here, when the Buddha was teaching, you can imagine somebody, a non-Buddhist, went to see the Buddha. Perhaps somebody who heard of a wise teacher causing a stir, you know, who's giving talks, who's traveling, maybe came somewhere toward his local area, his or her local area, decided to set off on a journey to go and ask a question. And to be motivated in such way, probably not just a kind of a random throw it out there question, requires like the effort of coming to session, required some effort to travel to hear the Buddha speak, and asked. And it's important point here, you know, in these koans, there's never a word wasted. Anything that was like a little extra got trimmed off a long time ago, until everything here is important. So he asked in all earnestness, So a serious question. A serious question about our life. About this profound mystery of existence. It really is an extraordinary thing to be thus. There's nothing ordinary about it. Really. I mean, I was really motivated to inquiring like years ago and coming to a practice like Zen. I couldn't understand why everybody thought this was normal. Like for life. Like people walking around as doing stuff and all these things going on. Like, what is this? Why this? Why me? What is going on here? Some people are never, perhaps are never motivated to look in a particular way. Or it's obvious. It's obvious for some people, perhaps. I don't know. I've only ever looked through these eyes. For me, it was important to inquire earnestly into this great matter, this appearance, this life and death, to look. It was important to this person traveling to see the Buddha. It was important to the Buddha. You know, we're all familiar with the story of the Buddha born into decent circumstances of the day. Right? So it's funny, it's like I had a book and he has one of these stories of the Buddha, of the Buddha's life, and it shows the palace, and I thought, oh, I don't think it looked that good, probably. We're talking about northern India, like 400 BCE. I'm not sure they'd have the gilded, you know, lampshades. Yeah, exactly. But for the circumstances, born into rich status, had power, and yet was not satisfied, saw the truth of impermanence. That great truth of impermanence, which sometimes is forgotten, but we're always reminded of the coming and going of all things. Some things may appear for a long time and seem dependable, like these mountains. I'm sure these mountains will be here long after this room isn't here. You know, but even the mountains, these mountains will disappear. All things are impermanent. And seeing very deeply into that, of course, he was motivated to inquire, to practice the tradition of the day. After all, the Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. Like this person questioning, probably from a Hindu background. But meditation was already a very old tradition at that time in that part of the world. And he practiced this tradition inside and out to the point of death, to the point of finally coming down to one immovable period of Zazen under the Bodhi tree. Sitting down, really sitting down, immovably, to settle that question for himself. And from the realization of settling that question, had some things to say, some things to share. And now the non-Buddhist or the person comes to ask the Buddha in all earnestness and shows already there's been inquiry there. It's not a very typical question. It says, I don't ask you about words. That right there shows some maturity of inquiry. It's, you know, please don't sell me a 6-week course. I'm not asking about that. I'm not going to be satisfied with the certificate or you know, it's not, I'm not asking about that. Please don't answer. Don't talk about words. Please don't explain it. I don't ask about words. Probably tired of words. You know, this life cannot be explained and given from one person to another. The heart of Zen can't be transmitted in that way. For years I would practice with Tenshin Roshi, and as part of me, I thought, why doesn't he just tell me what he's talking about? You know? I'm like, I'm 35 now. I can, you know, I think I'll be okay. Why didn't he just, you know? It always felt a little bit like that. Why talk around it? But the truth, the true realization is not given. It always is experienced right here. It doesn't come from another. All a teacher or some or words can do is to help aim in the right direction, which is pointing right back. Like bouncing a ball off a wall. Pointing right back. Look. Look here. Just look into this. You know, a question may not be even formed as a particular question, but rather a yearning or a desire or some compulsion to let go of suffering and let go of pain and fear and doubt and confusion and return to the place we once knew intimately in our hearts. We all remember that. That's what we turn back to. Over the years, we gather these clouds of conditioning, confusion, and ideas and disappointments and frustrations, beliefs and opinions, and they become burdensome. They become old, stale, and we want to let those go. So we come to sesshin. We come to a practice like meditation in order to let that go, let it all, put it all down. The great beauty of Zazen, or of sitting, is loss. You let go and you lose everything. You don't need any of it. Whatever we need is already thus, is already here. I don't ask you about words. I don't ask about no words. It almost feels like setting a trap for the Buddha, you know? I'm not asking about words, I'm not asking about no words. The Buddha's very kind. It's like, okay, I'll play along with your conditional question. We can look at words and no words. What does that mean, you know? Words, still things. We talk about this aspect of impermanence, the way we see the world. This morning it was clear. Now the snow on the ground. Tomorrow the forecast is for sun, coming and going. All things impermanent. I don't ask about words, I don't ask about things, I'm not asking about phenomena. Neither am I asking about no words. Really, that's when we sit, we can appreciate and become intimate with the realm of no words. We may have some words flying around between our ears, those little thought forms. So the words maybe are still bouncing around. You know, the great shift, the essential shift, in meditation, in sitting, practice, is to set aside one's concerns, to set aside plans, interpretations, and ideas. To resist the impulse in a period of quiet to reach in and to start to plan. I say that from one who knows. You know, when you get your 10,000 flying hours of doing nothing, you've spent a fair amount of them working, planning and scheming and doing those things. And the world continues to turn, the snow still comes down and thaws. Intrinsically, the world is not disturbed by a hair. But for each one of us, if we're always identified with the sense of me in the world, then we irrevocably harden and fix me in the world. And we're not able to make a leap. Like how Mumon in the verse says, not using steps or ladders, jumping from a cliff with hands free. Not using steps or ladders, jumping from a cliff with hands free. That's the leap of Zen. That's for stepping off the 10,000 foot pole. The letting go that doesn't rely on any construction. That doesn't rely on any idea. And we can really realize that in these, even in just a few days of session. But it really requires that shift that is able to arrange the body so and to just sit. Just sit. Thoughts arise. Thoughts disappear. Pain in the legs. Sound of the ravens. Warm and cold. And directly experiencing this expression without the value system. That is the difference. Setting aside the value system or our endless preferences about the present appearance. What we think or feel about it. That might still run. It still might be occurring. But if we're able to resolutely allow awareness to be as it is, then it reveals our life in a broader context. Instead of being just enamored of the few things running through the, chewing over the old bones of the things that we're thinking about, awareness is allowed to experience itself broader. We look at this nature that we are without a gap. Not looking in from the outside. You know, often Zazen or sitting can feel that way. We're sitting and here I am looking at this. Whatever this is. Here I am now and there's people. Here I am following my breath. Here I am doing this. That is a position to be dissolved. That's still doing something. That may be required to practice concentration. But ultimately, we sit, and disappear. Until there's no gap there. Then we see very clearly this no words. Or spaciousness, emptiness. So I don't ask you about words, I don't ask you about no words. And the Buddha answered by the Buddha just sat still. When asked that question, just sat. Still, like this. The non-Buddhist praised him, saying, The world-honoured one, in his great benevolence and great mercy, has opened the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way. It's quite flowery, isn't it? Like, different culture, different time. Two. But he, you know, the important thing is, okay, I'm not going to fall for this and I'm not going to fall for that. So just straight up, can you express this? And the Buddha just sits still. Thanks. And leaves. Now Ananda was the Buddha's nephew, or close attendant, sitting by the Buddha, says, what did he realize? What did the non-Buddhist realize that made him praise you so much? What was realized there? And the Buddha replied, he's just like a fine horse that runs at the shadow of a whip. It said that Ananda, of course, practiced alongside the Buddha and worked very hard at meditation for 40 years before eventually becoming accomplished or satisfied. Found it very difficult. Always had doubt. Like a doubting Thomas of Buddhism. In hearing this question from a non-Buddhist, seeing the Buddha's answer, and seeing the non-Buddhist leave, asks, what's realized? What is transmitted? What is enlightenment? Why don't I understand it? And there's a lot you could say along this point, but it would be a shame. That's the point that can't be expressed in words or no words. This horse at the shadow of a whip looks back at another tale, another sutra, and it talks about the different kinds of practitioners. The first of those that start at the shadow of a whip. So, you know, like race horses, just the seeing the whip gallops. Doesn't need much more than a hint. Then the other type are those who feel the impermanence of the world when they hear of the death of someone in their village. These are those, that second type, are those that need to be touched by the whip. A reminder of death close by. Then there are those who feel the impermanence of the world only when they hear of someone in their own family dying. And they need to feel the whip. It's a strong metaphor, isn't it? And the fourth kind are those that start running only when the whip reaches their bones. You have to be motivated. Only when, I'm sure you see you nodding, it's like many of us are that way. And we don't have to identify with any of these positions. You know, we might be all four in the course of one day a session. Might show up and start and be like, this is great. I'm into it. And then after a while, and the race keeps going, start to drop the pace a little bit. And Zazen can be that way. We may apply ourselves in a certain way, but then over and over again, showing up to sitting with different different energy, different feeling, a different understanding. What's important is the race continues. Some people, like this non-Buddhist, might be, the Buddha says, oh, he's a fast horse. You know, some, but like the hare and the tortoise, sometimes fast horses burn out. And the slow plodding horse wins the race. Of course, the race never... stretching the metaphor. But we might define ourselves as one kind of practitioner, one kind of meditator. But we don't have to carry around that identity. Or an identity or an idea about somebody else. You know, Ananda's in that place. He sees the Buddha and thinks he's enlightened. Sees the non-Buddhist leave and thinks, oh God, now he's enlightened. What about me? It's in living in the realm of horses. Yeah. Fast horses and slow horses. All these words, all of these teachings that come down again are meant to return us to this place to really to look and to be challenged. These koans are challenges to shake us also out of any temporary complacency. Well, this is just going fine, I'll just continue here. It's like, are you sure? Are you really, truly satisfied? Are you free? Really free? In the verse, it's walking on the edge of a sword, running over a ridge of ice, not using steps or ladders, jumping from a cliff with hands free. When we walking on an edge of a sword, running over a ridge of ice, a lot of attention required. A lot of attention required. That's the one thing that's required in the practice of the schedule. In the practice of each function of Zazen. You know, we have this, we vaunt or raise up the sitting practice, the sitting Zen. And we talk about that a lot. But then when we move, and the body moves, then it's walking Zen. Slow walking Zen. What's different, really? We move to faster walking, Zen, and leave the hall, whatever that next activity is. But if we're only running along a ridge of ice when we're sitting, then it's not applied off the cushion. This same, at least whilst we need to have a strong guide or a whip for our own attention, then we need to apply that to develop our concentration. Develop it here, moving outside of here into whatever the function is. Where is our attention? The beginning, it may seem like at work or a real job of things, having to aim attention in that way. But with time, with realization, we're able to let it run free, to let the horse wander where it wants to go. So with at least today and the rest of the time that we have, it's a time to look here. It's enough to look. You have to look for something. But rather explore the one that you are, that we are. Explore that thoroughly. Allow it all. Allow it all. It's not a matter of good and bad. It's not a matter of wise or dull. Yeah, it's an exploration and an opening into the one that we already are. And letting ideas and hindrances that have built up about the one that we are, let those go. Let those go. Reside in peace. Reside in the refuge of being thus, where Buddhist or non-Buddhist is irrelevant. Whether sitting or standing is irrelevant. We know who we are. And that's enough. Thank you for all of your considerable efforts so far. And we'll continue. Thank you.